I am Plata on the line in Vancouver, British Columbia at thecommentary.ca. In an age where businesses are seeking all manner of growth at any cost and whatever cost to their employees, a new book suggests otherwise. Company of One, Why Staying Small is the Next Big Thing for Business, looks at new approaches that are useful for any size of business. Paul Jarvis is the book's author, and he joins me now to talk about it as well as his personal experiences. He left the corporate world after realizing that working amid such high pressure was not ideal. It didn't yield the meaningful success that he wanted. Today he works for himself out of his home on a small island just off of British Columbia's west coast, where from where he joins me from today. I'll get Mr. Jarvis to tell us about how thinking small can yield big things, better things, like determining one's own hours and still be profitable and sustainable. Paul Jarvis is a writer, podcaster, and the creator of online courses for thousands of students. He spent many years working with professional athletes like Warren Sapp, Steve Nash, and Shaquille O'Neal on their online presences as a corporate tech designer and internet consultant. He's also worked with online entrepreneurs like Marie Forleo, Danielle Laporte, and Chris Carr, helping build their brands. Visit ofone.co for information on the book, as well as Paul's own site, pjrvs.com. This new book is published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. Please welcome to the Plant Online program, Paul Jarvis. Mr. Jarvis, good morning.
Hey, thank you very much for having me on the show today.
Thanks for joining us. So we're programmed, and it doesn't matter what sector one's in. You know, we're programmed to seek growth, any kind of growth, and usually at all costs. Not all of it is good growth. How have you been able to tell the difference?
Yeah, I think, and it's funny too, right? Because if you look at unimpeded rapid growth in anything else, it's typically defined as something like cancer, which isn't...
Yeah.
It's definitely not a good thing.
Right.
And so I think in business, I think the main point is that growth isn't good or bad. We need to just put some critical thought into it. So believing that growth is a byproduct of success can sometimes be good, but it can actually sometimes be detrimental. Through all the research I did for the book, I found that a lot of rapidly growing businesses end up going out of business, not because their product is bad or not because the consumer sentiment changes, but just because they've outpaced their profit. So a lot of times, it's very hard to be focused on profit when you're focused on this kind of rapid growth mindset.
Yeah, we should know that, but why is it that we don't then?
Ego and envy. I think it's just something as so totally and understandably a human trait where we think that if we start a business, then we need to be bigger to be more legitimate or to be more respected or to feel like we're doing well or to just feel like in comparison with our peers, with other businesses in the market, we feel like, well, it would just sound better if I could say, hey, I have a 1,000-person business and 18 offices across 6 countries instead of, well, I work from home by myself in a home office.
Yeah.
It's so understandably human that is kind of that can be a driving force in that. Now for myself and for a lot of the people in the book, I don't want to run a business because it looks good to other people. I want to run a business because it makes sense for the life that I want to have.
Yeah. I mean, people who are able to do what they love, where and as much as possible. I mean, those are really the successful people. And one could, after reading the book, could count you among those. Amongst this unique group, and we see when we read your book, Company of One, just how that works and how we can too. And it doesn't matter. I mean, you work alone, but I mean, Company of One can also mean, say, a small company, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think Company of One is more of a mindset or a business philosophy than a literal translation. Because even though I work by myself, it doesn't mean I have 4 or 5 freelancers that I work with on a daily basis. Now, they're not employees. I don't have to worry about HR or anything like that. I pay them very well, so they can take care of those things on their own, and I'm not responsible for them. I also have business partners. And I think even throughout the book, I talk a lot about businesses that are any size. Basecamp and Buffer are good examples, and they're at about about 50 to 60 people. And they're, I think, great examples of companies of one because they're very focused on letting profit drive slow and organic growth as opposed to just letting a metric of saying, well, growth is good, growth is always better, we need to be bigger sort of thing. So, yeah, I really think a company of one can be a business of any size, and the book is really written for people who are a one-person business or much more, for sure.
But back to this idea of your own story, because you opened the book telling us about what your experience, throughout the book you tell us about your experiences. What was happening in your own life that you decided to make this change? Because you were, like everybody else, working in a sort of corporate setting in a big city somewhere. But you decided, I mean, you're calling me now from this island off of the west coast of Canada, off of British Columbia there, where you're able to work alone and have been successful at it for a number of years, right?
Yeah, and I mean, I think a lot of it came down to, for me specifically, is that I never, even though my business has always done well and I've always had almost a backlog of clients, I've never wanted to promote myself out of the job I like doing. So for myself, I really like writing and designing. I don't want to be a manager. I'm actually not very good at managing other people. So I would never want to grow my business into a scenario where as my day-to-day life, I wouldn't enjoy it as much as I enjoy it now. And it was definitely, like, I lived downtown Vancouver for quite a while, and it was just a lot of noise, a lot of, this was when the tech scene was just kind of picking up, but it was just a lot of go, 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 fast pace, not really having any introspection or critical thinking about things that were happening in the business. And I just decided, like, hey, I'm not happy doing this, so why would I continue doing something that's not making me happy when I could work in a different way that, one, is still very profitable, but, two, ultimately gives me, like, for myself, I want a business that supports my life. Mm-hmm. I don't want a life that has to just support my business, and that's kind of the crux of it.
And so what, you'll pardon me, you don't have to answer this question, but what are your days like in terms of how much time you work and you talk about this lifestyle that you're able to have. What is that like in terms of where you are and how much time you're able to spend doing the things you want to do?
Sure. And I mean, I work probably 5 or 6 hours a day. Half of it is on what I call like deep focus work. Mm-hmm. So writing or design or things that I don't want to be interrupted by. The other half of the day is running the business. When you own a business, it's typically about half the time where you have to run the business. But then outside of that, I like to be outside. I live on acreage in the woods, and I have a big garden. I basically like to do things off of the computer. When I don't have to work, I really don't want to be working. So whether it's surfing or kayaking or hiking or gardening, all of those things are just as important to my life as my business is. And I really love working. But I don't want that to be the only thing in my life. I actually enjoy all of the other things as well that go with life.
And when you have a company like yours and the size that it is, it also lends well to the sort of personality that one has. And I guess does one have to be sort of a unique or a different kind of person to be a company of one, say?
I definitely agree that I think personality is a big part of business, especially small business. It tends to be why people buy from one small business and not another. And it's funny, I did a survey of my audience a few years ago, and one of the questions I added to that survey was, why did you buy from me? Because I write business books, lots of other people write business books, I teach courses, lots of other people teach courses, why me? And everybody, like the most common reply, the reply that pretty much everybody gave was because they've gotten to know who I am through the content that I share freely, through the things that I do for free in my business, and they've gotten to know kind of my style and my personality and all of that, and they've seen like, okay, this is one, somebody that I want to put trust into because trust is a precursor to sales regardless of what you're selling. And two, it's just like there's just it feels like there's more of a connection. So I think personality is important. I don't think you have to be outrageous or weird or have pink hair or something like that.
Yeah.
I think I'm obviously, if you see a picture of me, I'm covered in tattoos and I don't look like a business person, but you don't have to be that. I mean, I'm also very quiet and introverted. So the way that I show up for my audience is very much in that fashion, in a way that works for me and helps me, not be on all the time. I don't actually know how to be on all the time. But I show up in a very honest and authentic way for my audience, and then the reciprocity for that is that relationships are built and trust is built, and then if it makes sense for somebody to buy something from me, then they do.
And building the social capital, building this trust, I mean, it can be lost very quickly when something goes wrong, but cultivating that, I mean, that doesn't take much effort, does it?
No, I mean, a lot of it is just being, I think that consumer sentiment is changing, and I think it's changing back to the way it used to be. I think huge corporations are just a tiny blip on the timeline of human commerce.
Mm.
And in the past, it used to be that you would get to know a business, you'd get to know a business owner, you'd get to know what they stand for, and over the course of generations sometimes, you would engage in commerce with them. Big companies and multinational corporations have kind of taken that away, but I do, in all of the trends that I see, in all the research that I see, consumer demand and consumer want and consumer voting with their dollars seems to be moving back to that. People are more interested in supporting businesses at their local farmers market or direct-to-consumer brands on the internet that aren't massive, massive businesses. They want to get to know the business. They want to get to know what that business stands for. They want to vote with their wallets in ways that line up with the values that they have. So I definitely think that that's kind of the way that I've been seeing business and commerce going. And in that way, trust can definitely be built by having relationships. The main way that I connect with my audience, who then becomes my customers, is a mailing list that I have. And if people get that email, it doesn't come from no reply at Paul. Mm. It comes from my email. So they get reply, and I get that email in my inbox, and we can have a dialogue. And I can get to know those people and get to know how to serve them better.
What fascinates me as I'm reading your book, Company of One, is that you seem to have developed this real connection with your audiences, and I would assume have found that essential when dealing with your clients. Yet this connection seems to be a loyalty that works both ways, doesn't it?
For sure. In being that I always am as honest and as authentic as possible, and if there's a problem, because sometimes there are problems, then I would rather just own that problem, say, hey, look, this is what went wrong. This is what I'm doing to fix it. If you need to talk, then I'm here for you. And I think in doing that, instead of having a corporate speak thing saying or probably not even acknowledging the problem, I would rather acknowledge the good and the bad. And I would rather also just speak from a place of reality, especially when selling. I think a lot of times on the internet and in the digital landscape, people kind of have these inflated claims of things that their products can do, which are typically not the norm or typically not results that are received, whereas when I'm selling something, I would rather just say, hey, look, this is what it does, this is who it's for, and if it makes sense for you to buy it, then definitely go ahead. If it doesn't make sense to buy it, I completely understand. Not everything I do is for everybody. But in doing that, I do build basically a loyal following. More than half of the people that have bought one thing from me have bought more than one thing from me, and a large percentage of those people have bought pretty much all of the things that I've sold. So I'd rather make customers that last over time and that last a lifetime instead of constantly having to go out and find new people and get them to build trust and reciprocity. I would rather just keep going on that same core group of people, and it may not be a huge amount, but it's definitely enough. And we can have a relationship, and I can get to know them and their needs and what they actually want out of the things that I sell them. And then it's a win-win. They get exactly what they want, and my business is supported by their commerce.
The other thing that I was thinking about as I was reading your book is that technology has and how it's developed over the last 20 years or so, 20, 30 years, really has made careers like yours possible. I mean, a guy 40, 50 years ago couldn't do what you're doing, say.
Yeah, it's completely true. And I think that the technology that exists now just makes it so much easier to be a small business. It takes me, for example, it takes me just as long to write an article and email it to you as it does to write an article and email it to 35,000 people on my mailing list.
Yeah.
Like, that technology didn't exist, and I've worked for myself for 20 years, that technology didn't exist 20 years ago. Even in terms of commerce, it used to take 6-7 months sometimes to be able to sell one product on one website 20 years ago. And nowadays, it takes maybe 3 or 4 minutes to sign up for a PayPal account or a Shopify account or a Stripe account. So there's just so many ways to increase the connectivity directly to customers, directly to the people you want to serve, and they in turn can be directly connected to you.
So if technology changes as rapidly as it does, what do you think happens, say, in the short term, 5 years, 10 years down the road, especially when we're hearing a lot about AI, do you think that'll change how businesses, say, look or work?
It could, but I also think that a fundamental aspect of commerce is humanity. Mm. I think that's how business worked in the far past, and that's how it's starting to work now. So I think things like AI or bots can help, but I think there always needs to be a way to have humanity and to bring humanity into the sales process and the customer support process. So a good example of that is if you have, say, a bot on your website, and if a customer has a problem, they can type in the problem, and the bot tries to answer it. But if the bot doesn't answer it right the first time, then there just needs to be a way to say, like, I need to speak to a human being.
Yeah.
Even with my newsletter, if people reply to that and it went to a quitter, to an autoresponder, I would have the engagement, have the revenue generated from that. If I didn't have a human being on the other end. So there's definitely ways to use technology to increase reach or to increase scale a little bit, but there still needs to be a way. Like, how many times have people been frustrated in those phone trees where it's like, press 1 for this, press 2 for this.
Right.
You're 18 minutes into it and you still can't get to the human you want to talk to. And that kind of thing is very frustrating. So I think we do obviously very much need to avoid that, but we can use those things to kind of offset the amount of time required. If that's the first step, then the next step always has to be, well, here's a human.
Yeah. I'm jumping around a bit because there's just so much in your book that I want to talk to you about that I find fascinating. But back to this point of being a small company, being nimble as you are, you talk in the book about how that makes a company more resilient. The other thought that someone who hasn't read your book might have would be, since you're the only one, what if you're indisposed for a period of time or one project is taking longer than it should to the exclusion of another? Can a company of one get overwhelmed at times, and how do you deal with that?
For sure. I definitely think companies of one could get overwhelmed, but I also think that office workers in huge companies are more than likely to be overwhelmed than not the majority of the time.
Isn't that the truth, yeah?
With a small business, though, we do need to think a bit about the future. I mean, many years ago, I was working with a person who dealt in disaster response for large corporations, like planning if there was a major catastrophe, like anything from a nuclear war to a catastrophic earthquake. And she asked me, she's like, well, what if you pass away, or what if you're eaten by a bear? Because she knew I lived in the woods.
Yeah.
And it's important to have contingency plans for any size business. And, I mean, I think the first one that every small business should have, as soon as a business hits profitability, if they're small, the next step is to start saving and to start building a buffer. So if you have a slow month, if something takes longer than possible, if something goes not according to plan, then you still got savings there. So your business does, and you should always be increasing your savings. And I mean, I think that's a pretty good idea for a lot of people to have a kind of contingency plan if things go wrong. And also, if things go wrong and something catastrophic happens, like say you pass away, then there should be somebody else that knows, like my lawyer has all of the documentation and access to all the things I do. So if something went wrong, then that could be passed along to somebody else. So I think it's a little morose to think about those sorts of things, but I do think it's a worthwhile endeavor to consider them.
It's like that crypto guy, the cryptocurrency guy who died recently with a password and tens of millions of dollars are stuck somewhere.
Yeah, there's tens of millions of dollars in Bitcoin and other crypto that people just have forgot how to access their wallet.
The other thing that's to admire about you as I read your book is this idea that obviously is important in your life, and that's to teach everything you know, and that you are readily giving back the knowledge that you've gleaned over the years. The thing that I think we tend to overlook is that it doesn't make you weaker, does it?
No, it also doesn't ever affect the bottom line of a business's profitability in a negative way. Mm. I think in sharing what we know, especially with a potential audience, that's what builds trust. And I mean, I don't have to, I think a lot of people are afraid that somebody else is going to steal their ideas when ideas aren't really, they don't really have that much value. It's the execution of the ideas. Somebody else can have an idea to write, say, a business book on challenging growth, but that's fine. I would actually encourage it. I would love to see more books on the same subject as mine because that will show a trend. But they're not going to be able to. I think we need to be protective of the execution. So if somebody tries to publish a book that has all of the same words in the same order as my book, then I would take issue with that. But if somebody else is writing a book on the same subject, I would be happy with that. So I would rather share freely every idea that I have because that builds trust with an audience. That gives an audience a way to get to know a business that I don't see any harm in that, even though there seems to be perceived harm. And I just keep seeing value, especially value over time. And me doing this for 20 years, it just keeps helping my business and making my business better and more valuable to the people that I serve.
Do you see yourself doing what you're doing? I hate to use the age of 65 because that's largely relevant in a lot of sectors nowadays. But do you see yourself doing this for another, say, 20 years?
I mean, I definitely see myself running a business, this type of business that I run, where it's a small business and it relies a lot on the digital and technology. But honestly, I don't know. Like, 10 years ago, I didn't think that I would be a writer. 22 years ago, I didn't think that I would be working for myself at all. So I also feel like I'm not really employable, nor do I want to be at this point by a large company. And I also really like the work that I do, and I try to pace it in a way where if I want to be working like this in 20 years, I can be because I'm not working 16 hours a day, and I'm overly stressed all of the time. Obviously, it's not super stressful, but I don't want that to be stressful. So I'm kind of setting myself, it's like a marathon. Yeah. So I'm setting myself up to be able to finish the race as I get older, like in 15 years, if I'm still doing this, I would be happy because this is what I actually really enjoy doing.
It's a company one is an incredibly useful book and an engaging one at that. Congratulations on its publication, and thanks for your time today.
Yeah, thank you very much. This was such a fun conversation, so I appreciate it.
Visit ofone.co and pjrvs.com. Company of One, Why Staying Small is the Next Big Thing for Business. It's published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt. Paul Jarvis joined me on the line from an island off of the coast of British Columbia. In Vancouver, I'm Joseph Planta.